Good morning, Bartholomew.
Good morning.
We were wondering if you would speak on the subject of ethics.
Well, as we discussed prior to beginning this tape, what I think would be most advantageous is, since you have spent many years in the study of ethics from the Western point of view, I think it would be most helpful if we could have some kind of a give and take here. Not just my lecturing, but you also bringing forward different opinions and ideas. I would like to tie some of these things in with some of the outstanding masters that have been manifest on the earth plane, one of which, of course, most definitely would be the Socratic and the Platonic modes of thought. So if we could begin with a question from you.
Yes. Can you tell me whether a system of ethics to be followed by people on the earth plane is possible or desirable? That is, should we have a logically consistent system of rules that we somehow apply to our daily actions?
All right. Now, one of the things that I know some of you are using my tapes for is by way of an excuse for some rather erratic behavior that you feel is something that you want to do, and somehow, since I have said what the actions of the body are nowhere near as important as the movements of one's awareness, then this therefore is taken as license to do what you please. Understand this. A question like this cannot ever be answered on one level, because just as a child must be taught not to jump into the freeway when it is young, when it is older, there may be a time when that child must jump on the freeway as an adult to do some other kind of an action to save a life or whatever. I mean, there are no rules that you can say you must never venture onto freeways. This is the kind of thing. But as a child, you say you must never venture onto freeways, and the chances are you would be right. There is never a time when a child should move onto the freeway. This would probably be, and even then it could be up for discussion, but generally speaking, this would not be something that would ever happen. Well, so it is with the different persons on the earth plane. The thing that has to be seen is, if you are truly in a state hovering on wisdom, then you have probably, in your lifetime and many lifetimes before, spent a great deal of time refining your own mind. By that I mean you have been frank with yourself about the areas of darkness that are embodied in your psyche, as Platonics would speak of it, and have faced that reality. And instead of excusing your behavior, you will have questioned and said, is there something better than this that I am participating in? And would have undergone a careful self-analysis to the point of making sure that you had thrown out and were beginning to throw out all of the darker aspects of the thought forms that you had pulled to you, and made a concerted effort joyfully to bring to you the vaster light forms that are also available to the psyche. So, I can only answer in varying shades. Normally speaking, when I am speaking to someone who is just beginning the movement toward self-awareness, if I were to be asked, which I rarely am, what is the highest form of action in this field, I would be very tempted to set out a set of rules.
Well, what would they include?
Basically, one would have to keep the goal in mind of, please look to your motive. If your motive on analysis turns out to be something to make you fulfill a body desire, and if in the fulfillment of that desire you have in any way hurt another person, in any way, if you could conceive and knowingly know that you will hurt someone else in the process, or make someone else's life more difficult in the process, or somehow putting your own life first and another person's life second, I would ask that this be something that you look carefully at and then make your decision. The problem with the rules at any level, especially when they clamp down on people's desires, is that they may perform the action according to your rule, but they will resent it. And so the reason that I always suggest that people go ahead and follow some of their less harmful desires is that to clamp down on desire on someone is to really set them into a pattern of anger, because they will go ahead and do, for example, it's the classic statement of, if someone wants to be unfaithful to their partner, should you tell them not to be as a higher person? Well, if they do not go ahead and participate in what they wanted to do, their actions then remain on a higher plane. But what in the end do they do? They end up being so angry against the person who has stood as their police person against this action, whether it be the spouse or whether it be the minister of their church or the priest or whatever, or some kind of higher form of God, they will end up being angry instead of being grateful that they have perhaps kept themselves out of a situation that would end up being very difficult for them. Instead of being grateful for that, they are resentful because their little desire has been chopped off and they haven't been able to do whatever they want. Understand that the human reflection is this. They say, I should be able to do anything I want at any time I want to and in any way I want to and with whom I please, and no one should stop this action. Now, in a sense, they are saying something that is very high and very meaningful, because on the very highest level, the absolute wise person is able to do this. But understand that there is a great deal of space of understanding between the wise man who stands on that precipice that knows the correct action and this other person who is simply moving out of capricious desires. If you followed all of the desires that rose in your being, your lives would indeed be comic and you would see it. You would just have to see how foolish you are. But you're very careful, all of you, about which ones you follow. Because you see, you also want to do all of these things that hurt others, but at the same time, you want to appear good in your own eyes, and if possible, in the eyes of as many of your fellow humans as possible. Now, this is not ethics. This is not ethics. This is simply, how can I get what I want and do what I please and have as small amount of repercussion from others as possible?
Yeah, this is more manipulation.
It is only manipulation, my friend. I see no great ethical stance in this kind of life. And the quality of whether you have been successful or not is, am I caught? And if I am caught, to what degree am I punished? This is all that I see in this realm.
Would you comment on, and I can't quote it directly, but the paraphrase from Jesus, that all things are available or open unto you, but you will not do all things. That is that, and the way I take that is that any action is allowed. one who has entered the kingdom of heaven, but you would not necessarily do just anything.
All right, now then, let us move on to what I sense is your next question, which is, if this is true for the mundane person who is just simply moving through their karma and trying best to balance their karma out, which is really what you were doing. Ethics is helpful in balancing karma.
Mm-hmm.
This is where ethics is very, very helpful. Now, let us then say, all right, Bartholomew, then you say that there is no right form of conduct, and I say there is always absolute right form of conduct, but the only one who has access to that form of conduct is the truly wise man. All right, now how then does he have something that, say, the mediocre person does not have? What the wise man knows, and what Plato and Socrates certainly knew, was that in each instant, the wise man having left the last instant behind, is able to perceive within the instant the movement of energies that will perform in a maximum way, and are able then to make the decision that will move the energy of that instant into some dynamic movement that will be of maximum value for all concerned. Now, that sounds very difficult to do. Actually, it's very simple to do if you have dropped off your own desire. Do you see where the catch comes? If one person in the midst of all of these is truly no longer self-interested and has truly dropped their own desires and has no desire for the outcome, then the flow of the energy can be perceived. The thing that keeps you blinded, all of the humans, the thing that keeps you blind is that you have already decided how you want the energy to flow, because you have already made up your mind what you want to do. You are not truly interested in what is right. What you are truly interested in is how to manipulate the situation so that you can have what you want and still appear to be good. This is a very different thing. So, what you have to accept is, if you were one of these people who was really seeking freedom, I would suggest to you that you know within each event what is really going to help others the most. The question is, will you choose to do it? Because the problem always arises in giving up of what you want to do. Always has its backlash, unless you are very sophisticated. It has the backlash that comes back and says, all right, I have done this for you. Now what are you going to do for me? You see, it's always, I will give, but you better give in return, or else next time I'm going to make my choices differently. Do you see? There's this total manipulation that says, all right, I will do this for you, but then I need something back from you in return. It is this idea that when you give something, you have lost it, and then you deserve something in return. The thing that the wise man knows that is not available to the mundane mind is that in the giving is the receiving. By that I mean absolutely clearly, understand this, if you do not give something, you will not receive it. You will not receive it. You must give in order to receive it, because giving and receiving are one. Also, state of being and giving are the same thing. By this I mean, if you say to me that you are a loving person, any of you, and if I perceive your performance on the earth plane as being selective in who you love and the quality that you love, I know that you are deceiving yourself. Because loving is a state of being. It does not make selective choices. As long as you are making selective choices, what you are saying is, I have more investment in this kind of a relationship than another kind, and I will invest my giving in this relationship, but I will withhold it in this relationship. All right? Now, this kind of manipulative giving of energy, of love, if you will, is a hallmark of someone who is limited in their understanding of what love really is. So, when you get to the more rarefied aspects of love and giving, you will see that as you give the love, you have increased it within yourself. This is absolutely the truth. That which you give increases within you. And my friend, so is it also on the negative side of the earth plane. What you give to others, you increase in yourself. If you give judgments to others, you know, one of the biggest problems on the spiritual path is those who judge other seekers. I think this is one of the hallmarks of someone who has not really let go of the illusion, one who stands in judgment of others on the path.
Is that why, according to one tradition, they talk about deadly sins, and the worst is pride?
Yes, because
the last thing you get over
is pride. Yes, because you see, one of the sad things about the human situation is, as they see themselves building what they call virtues, for example, they serve mankind and they are loving, and they, in their terminology, they are loving, and they do not, and of course the biggest trap is, well, they don't smoke and they don't drink and they don't swear and they don't do all of these mundane things, you know, on the earth plane. Somehow they think that this is a virtuous act, being very confused with what virtue truly is, and therefore they begin to see themselves as a virtuous man, and everyone knows that a virtuous man should be the one that judges others, mm-hmm. you see, and therefore they get into the trap of deciding how other people's actions, whether they are really meeting the standard or not, mm-hmm. totally forgetting that each person has their own destiny, and it is not anyone's business ever to know how anyone should move in any given situation. You cannot know this. You cannot know this. And therefore, perceiving all of this surface detail, this person becomes very prideful of their own virtue. You see, they see themselves as a good person, and therefore they fall into the very easy abuse of this power, which then is to go around prattling to others about how they should be acting, totally unaware of how one should really act in the situation, because they really cannot speak to that. So my concern, and where I hit hardest, is because I see so clearly so many of these people have accepted this mediocre idea of virtue as a mediocre way of life. And I bang away at that because I want them to wake up to the fact that really they have no business judging. But what they do, of course, is to only look at what I have said and say, well, this just means that Bartholomew is in favor of license. This is absolutely untrue. My understanding, as I view the earth plane, is that as you become more and more rarefied in your spiritual endeavors, as the state of mind becomes more clarified and the air around you becomes more rarefied, what I see happening is that one's own desires, not because, you know, someone who is old has fewer desires in a sense than one who's young, but someone who's in the midst of a young cycle in their life and is giving up more and more of their desires and turning them over, first of all, to the desire of others to serve others on the earth plane, you know, that is truly beginning the true path of virtue. Because when you look at a situation and say, well, I could probably want to do this if I really got myself behind wanting to do this, but I see so clearly that what I need to do is, in this instance, is to serve the other truly, by choice, joyfully, not angrily, but joyfully, and never even speak about having done it, but simply give up my own desire in this instance. More and more as one does this and feels the joy, rather than the anger, but feels the joy of having helped another human being into some state of greater peace, so that their life might be more open to the spiritual quest. More and more as you do this, you will begin to see this funny statement of virtue being its own reward. You see, because in the end, if you're watching and you feel anger, then you've missed the boat, and you might as well go ahead and follow your own desires, because I don't really see a whole lot of difference between not doing an action that's going to hurt others and on the one hand, on the other hand, having this tremendous anger against this person for having kept you from doing something that you really wanted to do. I think that these are things that certainly I see married couples falling into these patterns a great deal, and I think this is very disharmonious, mm-hmm. very disharmonious. And so the one who really is the greatest love giver in these relationships is the one who can look at the other person and say, if I am to perform this action, this is going to be very, very painful for this other person. Whether it is something vast, such as cheating on the income tax so that the person ends up in the confines of the state, or if someone, you know, goes from the vast to the small, well, I have this desire to be angry and to just splatter all over this other person, but this I will not do, not because I want to appear virtuous, but because I know somehow I will be hurting this other person. Do you see? That is when you truly begin to move into a different kind of life. And to tell you the very honest truth, it is no seeker who has not gotten to that place in life really has much chance of great illumination. And do you see why?
Well, would you elaborate?
Well, if you are still concerned with your own desires over those of other humans on the earth plane, knowing full well what will best expedite their path, but you want to have your own desires, so you keep blocking it because of your own desire patterns. If you cannot give over on the mundane plane, how in heaven's name are you going to surrender to the higher powers when you cannot know what they have in mind for you? Do you see? The person who absolutely eradicates the human level and who refuses to give over their will, if they will, to that of someone else on the earth plane, how can they really envision themselves being able to surrender to a vast power that they cannot even see? You must deal with what you see first. You must deal with what is before you. You know, it's this old statement, whatever is before you is it. And I assure you that if you continue to use each other in the highest, loftiest way, which is, how can I use this person to free themselves and to free me of the illusion? If you keep this as the way you use your world and each other, you will then find one glorious day that they are God and you are God, and you have really been working in harmony with the God plan all along. Only it's been done on the human level, and this is the way I think most people of the New Age are going to move into enlightenment. It used to be that you moved yourself out of the human environment into the rarefied atmospheres of the various places of the world and worked with it deeply within your own being. This is not possible for many people on the earth plane, and there are many people seeking wisdom and seeking the light. And so now comes the new way. It's always been available, but now it is available in a greater force, which is now that you will be able to use the earth plane. Knowing it is a projection of your own mind, you will be able to use it to free you. Just as you have used it on the one hand to entrap you, now you will use it to free you. And the way you do that is to see everything as a vehicle for freedom. And by that I simply mean, who are you going to serve? Are you going to look at other and say, therein lies the Son of God, if you wish to use those terms. Therein lies divine energy. I will not stop with my attention on the periphery. I will move to the vast self of that person, and I will bring forward that quality within that person in my view. And when you do this over and over, what you will find is that you make the connection between their vast beauty and your own, and you will become free through each other. If you see others as obstacles, then know that there will always be obstacles within your own mind. But if you can only see others as the power of the divine, if you can see everything as the power of the divine, and keep that in the forward part of your mind, and allow all of the other to take place as a periphery activity, but keep your mind on that deeper sense, then it will come forward. So, is there another?
In ethics, there are several major divisions. One has it, and I think that Plato was on this side of it, it's called the deontological view, that actions have a right or a wrong character to them. They are not evaluated in terms of the results that come from the actions. That is to say, the other school of thought, the utilitarian view, would claim that the only way to know whether an action is worthwhile is in terms of the amount of good things that come out of the action for the number of people, the largest number of people. And if you could somehow weigh that, the amount of pleasure as opposed to pain that comes out of a given action, then you would know if it was good. The deontological view would be, no, you don't look to the consequences of an action to assess its rightness or wrongness. Mm-hmm. Do you have any position on this old
All
argument?
Right. All right. No, I do not agree with the second. I do not think, you know, if you took a poll along your block of what people would want you to do, I say again, you would probably come up with close to the lowest common denominator. You see, I mean, this is taking a poll of what was going to make most people pleased. All right. But we have to talk in terms of the difference between someone being pleased, which in my view means that they have tasted pleasure, and someone who is joyful, which means that they have tasted joy. For me, from my perception, the quality that you should look for to know whether an action is right or wrong is what is the degree of deep joy taking place within the person who is performing this action. It is my firm conviction, and I may be utterly wrong, and if I am, I want you to speak to it. It is my utter conviction that when someone is performing an act that is truly correct, truly maximum, one knows within one's being that there is joy, because something is joyful taking place within you. On the other hand, when you are doing something that pleases yourself on the pleasure area and pleases others on the pleasure area, you can feel what I would call a titillation. No doubt about it, there is a pleasurable movement to that. But if one is paying close attention, either right after the act is performed, either of speech or of body or of mind or whatever, but right after that comes what I call the backlash, which is the guilt, the knowing, the remorse, the anxiety over what one has performed. If there is anxiety performed in an act, the chances are that you are moving in guilt and going from pleasure to guilt, which is the syndrome that most of the human being works on. They indulge themselves, and the backlash is remorse, regret. And I don't mean great and overwhelming remorse. You know, another thing I need to speak to is I hear again and again from people, well, I don't have those feelings. Well, I don't feel like that. And most of the time, it's because they're not paying attention. They think that it has to be so overwhelming that it's like a sea coming over them. But realize that most of you have protected yourselves from your negative side so well that if you're not paying close attention, you will miss it. But you've got to pay attention. And if you aren't paying attention, then you will miss these little movements of guilt around the periphery of things. Pay close attention and you will see. If your mind starts being a little bit anxious, or if you have a little feeling of, well, I do wonder if I did the right thing. I wonder if so-and-so will ever find out about my thought or my action. If you have this kind of a feeling going on, however small, understand that you've been moving in the realm of ego, and I doubt very sincerely that you have moved at maximum. You may escape judgment. You may not be punished. But I still don't really know if you have moved out of the realm of self-desire. On the other hand, when someone is involved in an action that is truly maximum, there comes into that movement a knowingness. That is all that I can say about it. It is a knowingness, a knowing deeply within you of the knowing rightness of what one has done and what one has been able to put into motion.
Well, Socrates speaks of his daimonion, or his voice. He says that I have a divine voice that that I listen to and that directs me, and that is apparently his criterion for knowing in matters of action whether he should do a certain thing or not. He's told.
Exactly. But you see, he was told. He was told, and constantly told. And of course, I keep saying, and very few believe me, that this is a state of awareness available to all humans if they simply would start to listen for it. You see, they just simply don't listen. They take the surface answer, which is the loudest, and they take that to be what they should do. And then, of course, they hook it up with virtue, and away they are. You know, as I say again, those who think themselves to be virtuous are much harder to deal with than those who think they are sinful. I find that it's much easier to deal with those who consider themselves sinful, because they are open to learning. Someone who was immersed in their own virtue, however subtly, and sets themselves up as some kind of a teacher and so on, these people are very hard to deal with, because they see themselves as being virtuous, and then all they do is try and take what I have said and line it up. If it meshes with their own given, then everything is all right. Then they will accept what I say. If, on the other hand, it doesn't happen to always dovetail and fit, then they have a problem. And most of the time, they will try somehow to jiggle the things around and juggle it around so that it meets with what they want.
Maybe they'll just reject it if it doesn't really fit.
Well, this is the common thing. Just throw it out and, well, he didn't mean it, or, well, you know, the woman was confused, or whatever. There's always a way out, and that's all right. So be it. Take the back door until you find that the back door is not really helping you along your path of understanding. But by all means know that in the great ones, they know. They know in different ways. Some of them know through a voice that speaks clearly. Some of them know through a spontaneous knowingness that comes over them, if you will, and right action is then performed and then dropped. And, you know, a truly wise man knows that when that action A and action B, if you have the same event that seems so much to be the same, there's always a difference. For example, if there are three people involved in an action, and the wise man responds in a certain way at one time, and then the next time there are three other people, he acts completely different, and then those around him say, look how inconsistent your actions are, and he says, well, of course, the same people were not involved. Or let us say that the same people were involved, and he would say, but simply, they are not the same person, because so much has happened to them in between. How can you possibly equate the two? They are not the same. He sees the difference. You see, he sees change as an ever-going process, and he understands that just as change is always happening, so is different responses needed in different situations. He is not limited by what went before. Clearly never limited by what went before, because he sees the ultimate good in the moment of all of the energies impinging. And this is action available to people on the earth plane. It is available, but the problem comes when they have already made up their mind in a preconceived idea of what right action is. If you think you know what right action is in your mind, be aware that you are moving out of a system. And a system can help you, it can keep you from chaotic action. And as I go back to the statement, if you ask me if I am for some systems, I must say at certain stages of development, by all means, I am for systems, because they keep people from doing things that will be completely foolish. The interesting thing about humans, though, that I have observed, is that they want the rules, but not for themselves. They are very pleased that there are rules, because it keeps the other guy from performing some action that they don't want performed. But when it comes to themselves, my friends, it's always open. Everybody approves of income tax, because after all, the government needs money, and they want those very certain people to have it very heavy, and they want them to have to pay taxes and so on. But when it comes to their own situation, they would like very much to find a way out. Or yes, they approve of thou shalt not commit adultery until it comes to their own case, and then their own case somehow is different, that their wife or their husband somehow isn't quite meeting their expectations, or it would be good for their wives, or isn't it, I mean, what a loving person I am, or rules are fine as long as they don't impinge too tightly on the shoes of the person who has to stand in these systems. So I have observed that as much as people want rules, they're always very happy to break them in certain instances if they think their desire is so great and so vast that they feel the necessity to override, you see. And very flimsy, in the end, are these systems. Do you see? They don't work. The reason that I'm not heralding the virtues of these systems is that in my experience, as I look at you on the earth plane, is that you don't use them. When it comes to an overwhelming desire, oftentimes the system stands second. There would be no murders, you know, on the earth plane if you believed and followed the systems. Every murderer knows that he's standing outside of the law, but he proceeds anyway. And he proceeds on the understanding that whatever he's doing is so right for the moment that it must be done. You know, it just must be done. And later on he will say, well, he was out of his mind and so on. And what he's really saying is he's stepped out of the system and it allowed his desires to carry him. But people do this all of the time. I mean, the murderer is the extremely overdrawn example, but it happens every day. Every day I see people on the earth plane acting in this way, pretending to be understanding and non-judgmental, and yet telling other people how to run their lives, just on that mundane level, thinking that they know how other people should act. Look to yourselves, my friends. All of you listening to this tape, look to yourselves. How much of the day do you spend deciding how other people should be running their lives? And how do you know? And then, of course, the jeopardy comes If you are an authority figure of any kind, even a mediocre authority figure, you know, with very little power but seeming power, and you look out into the earth plane and you make judgments and you go to these people and you tell them how they should run their life, but you couch it with such kindness of, may I make a suggestion? And of course, if you were afraid of a backlash, knowing full well that you are infringing on somebody else's property, you will probably start out with a statement such as, may I make a suggestion, which means, are you going to be so arrogant as to not allow me to speak to you, this kind of thing. But if this is the kind of process that's going on, understand that you have set yourself up as thinking that you know how others should really act. And then the question must arise, what about an instance when you might know something that would be helpful to another person? How then should you really handle this situation? Now I'm going to say something that is going to make a lot of them angry, but I must say it. I go back to my statement. You state that you believe what I say, then I ask you to believe what I have said, which is that the lowest form of real communication is words. If you truly feel that people are acting in a way that is not maximum for them, if you really feel that, you cannot know that, but you can feel it, you can have the feeling that this is so. Instead of going to them and verbally discussing it with them, the reason that you would verbally discuss it with them is because you want them to know that you know. Do you see the subtlety of this? You know the answer, and therefore you go to them and you say to them, I have this suggestion for you. And you honestly feel that the only way you can reach this person is through the verbal. I would tell you that this is false, and that most of the time when you're doing that, you are trying to meddle in a way that will make you appear to be wise and the other to be not wise. And usually, if you are very clear and very, very deep in your awareness, instead of really being interested in the outcome, what you're really interested in is letting them know that you have found them wanting. What I would suggest to you, if you really wish to be maximum in helping others, is to take that to the highest level. And in the highest level of that rarefied movement of mind, putting out a thought form that says, my dear brother, my dearest brother, I sense that in this action that you are doing, there is something that might be helpful. I would like to just simply put this out into the thought form world, and knowing that we are one, knowing that it will reach you on some level, and allowing it to go its own way, and not pounding away at it. Because if you pound away at it, my friends, you might be pounding away at something that is not really right. You might be pounding away at a thought that is not truly helpful. You say, you have no way of knowing. What you have not accepted, all of you, is that your thoughts influence each other. What you send out into the universe, you are responsible for. This is why I say to you, be very careful what you send out, because what you send out, you are responsible for. And if you wish to see it, if you send out a very strong thought form about something, you might influence that other person. But then please be all ready to accept part of the karmic response from that. Understand that those things that you build strongly within your mind and send out, you are responsible for the results of those. And you must accept this as part of the destiny. And this is why we say when you truly are free of karma, what that means is that you have turned your thought-making process over to the divine source, and the divine source is now able to do it for you or do it in conjunction with you, which is really a clearer way of saying it. Truly, you are a participant, but you are a participant on such a high level that there is no disharmony between the higher form of energy and your own. You are co-participants. It's not as if you were nothing. It is you are co-participating in the creation of this. But you were so in harmony that there is no disharmony and no chance of less than maximum. So those of you who are prone to speaking on the earth plane and trying to help others, I would ask you to be aware that when you do this, almost in every instance you are going to have a backlash. And it is, and you deserve it, because you are really, in your own way, trying to put forward your own views over those of others, not really understanding. And you say to me, then you mean I really do not know what is right? And I say, I have been trying to tell you this for months, all of you. You do not know what is right for another. You can only make an assessment, and then if you truly have their good at heart, then you will take it, the two of you together in your mind, you will take yourselves to the highest level, and you will just lovingly put this idea out, and then let the gods, if you will, do with it what they will. Do you see? This is the highest form of communion. This is how the great ones commune with those of you on the earth plane, is through this rarefied form. And this is why it goes back to my statement, which is, I need meditators. Because it is through that form of rarefied communion that we can make our deeper forms of hookup, you see. So those of you who are on the earth plane verbally speaking and trying to put your ideas across, when you do not believe what I say in words about communication through words, it is simply because you have empowered words with a great deal of power that they do not deserve. You have given words an efficacy that I do not see as being truly valid. Words are the lowest form of communion. They are the lowest form, and that is not the state upon which I would ask you to build much faith and much belief and much desire. And you say, well, then what am I to do with my life? What am I to do with my life? How can I go around? I mean, I have to talk to people. I have to. And I say, of course you have to. Go ahead and talk to people. But I don't suggest that you use communication for communing. Use it for certain forms of rudimentary understanding, by all means. But to put your faith in being able to communicate something to someone on the verbal plane, I think that you will see, if you're watching your own verbal patterns, you will see what you use communication for. Most of the time, my friends, you use communication to put others down, to justify your own position, to let others know that you are right, to set other people in action to do what it is that you want them to do. If you doubt what I say, pay attention to what's going on in your verbal patterns and the things that you want to say but don't say, because you know that it will make you appear not so exalted in the eyes of others. Just watch your own verbal patterns, my friends. And you, if you think I'm being too hard on you, whoever of you are squirming at this time or feeling indignant, fine, then I would ask that you communicate with me in some way and let us really see. Because everyone who really is moving in divine energy knows that when they are really helping is when their mouths are shut and their hearts are open. It is true that in some very rarefied instances, the power, when some heart is so attuned to divine energy, some things can be said on the verbal level. But even then, you stand the risk. And it's so seldom the case. It is so often the case that you're simply using it because you are dissatisfied with the performance of other people, and you wish to make this very clear, and you make it very clear through your judgment. And as I say, if you're really trying to still appear to be very much the good guy, you will couch it in such phrases as they will appear to be absolute fools if they do not accept your great teaching. But it's only your own ego that has made a decision that really, even if they agree wholeheartedly, and this often happens, in order to keep out of further confusing communication, someone will agree with you. This doesn't necessarily mean that they agree with you. It just means that they realize that you are being pig-headed and that there's no way that they're going to talk you out of it, so they allow you your little caprice. But in the end, what has happened? Is there any real communication going on? Is communion really there? Is communion really a part of that?
I guess what people don't always consider in addition is what do you do in the case where the person listens to it and ends up doing it? Well, because you said they should do it and they end up doing it, then who picks up the consequences of the action?
Well, very rarely do the humans see. They then put what I call the double ploy, which is they give out the advice. If the person follows it and doesn't end up well, usually the way they end up rationalizing that kind of behavior is, well, they didn't need to listen to me anyway. They had their own free will. They didn't really need to listen to what I said. It's, you know, it's their problem. Oh my. Really understand that it's very rare that a person considers themselves to be wrong. They usually consider themselves to be in some way justified for what they do. We're back to ethics. You will find justification for those actions that you wish to perform. And your mind will be fooled, but I ask you, is your soul fooled? You know, is there any movement of dissatisfaction of any kind within you? Any moments of remorse at all? Any twinges anywhere?
Socrates thought that his divine mission was to try to show people that they do not know what they think they know. That the problem with people generally is that they believe that they know a great many things, and they certainly know what should be done in the realm of ethics, what behavior is right, and his job was simply to try to alert them that maybe they don't know what they think they know.
Exactly. But you see, that is every real master's job. That is every real master's job, my friend, is to try and point out to you, all of you, that what you think is real is not real. The assessment that your senses have made is faulty. Is it possible that you are wrong? Is it just possible that your perceptions are lacking? So back to the beginning subject, which is then, what about the Ten Commandments? What about the Sermon on the Mount? What about all of those deep laws that move through all the vast religions of the world? What about all of those? What then is my stand? And my statement is, if you question those obvious modes of behavior, then you are really very far from true understanding. Because if you look carefully at most of those rules, what they are pointing toward is a way of life that puts you second and other first. That is all they are trying to do. To love thy Lord thy God with all thy heart, with all thy soul, with all thy mind. What does this mean? It means put and your neighbor as yourself. What does this mean? Simply means, where is your attention? Where is you in that? The you is second. All of these others are first. And if your attention is truly on behaving in a way that will expedite other people's harmony, you will find that all of your behavior changes. All of your behavior changes. You must be critical about this and look very carefully at it and ask yourself about what the right behavior then is in a certain situation. I again repeat, if you do not believe in those simple and obvious ways of behavior as reflected in the higher teachings of the religions of the world, then you are a long way from understanding what a true student of the way is. You cannot follow the way if you are self-indulgent. You will always pick a way that will help you to indulge yourself. It is only when you awaken to the knowledge that you and your brother are one, and that in serving your brother, you serve God within that person, and somehow you will turn your whole frame of reference around. And then these things, to honor thy father and thy mother, I mean, how obvious a statement, and yet how few do it. But it is so utterly obvious. And if you can look on all people as your father and your mother and your brother and your sister, if you take this and apply it to everyone in the world, then how obvious a statement it is that you should not lie. How obvious a statement. All of these things are so utterly obvious, and yet, to the devious mind, to the mind who wants to do what they want to do, they will override all of these things. Mm-hmm. To not covet thy neighbor's goods. What a simple statement. But you see, they are all based, if you only saw rightly, you would see that what is your neighbor's is yours. That you have everything and need nothing. to honor your father and your mother is to honor God and to honor yourself, because you are your father and your mother. There is no difference between that. To never speak a lie, it is so obvious, because lying comes out of illusion, and truth stands for itself. All of these statements that you have such a hard time following, all of you, are so simple, are so very simple. And the reason that they're simple is that they lie on a very basic understanding, which is that if you could see the world as it really is, all of these things would be self-explanatory. You would know immediately the truth of all of these things. If you could begin with a basic assumption that everything is you, and that everything should be treated with the same care that you treat yourself, you would soon see something very interesting. Because, you know, you will go to the ends of the earth to justify your own behavior, your own words, your own ideas. Well, give this same to others, and you will find your whole world changing before your eyes. The minute someone says something, if you can look beyond to the vastness behind what is going on, then you will see immediately the relevancy of accepting them and the irrelevancy of fighting and resisting and trying to defend yourself. I go back to my statement. You do not need to defend yourself because you cannot be attacked. While it is ultimately and obviously true that the body can be attacked, I do not deny this. You can attack other bodies and you can destroy them, and yours can be destroyed too, but what you are cannot be attacked. What you are transcends all of this. Understand that most of what we're talking about deals with bodies. And the reason that eventually you have to leave the field of ethics behind is that it deals with bodies. You have to move to a rarefied atmosphere that doesn't move with bodies, that doesn't look on bodies and how they move on the earth plane as the ultimate expression of the divine, but moves into that rarefied air that knows, in the Socratic words, that it is the movements of the soul. In my words, it's the divine energy at play that has nothing to do with bodies. So, of course, I believe in the Ten Commandments, and of course I believe in the Golden Rule and the Middle Way and all of these things. Of course I believe in them. And those of you who would doubt that, you have simply not been listening. They are so obvious to me that it boggles my mind that you do not see the relevancy of treating others like this. Go ahead and follow those inner desires if they lead you. Go ahead and then pick up the remorse and the regret. Go ahead. But again, I say, you know when you are acting out of your own self-will and when you're moving from divine wisdom. You know it. There is no mystery. One thing that I would like to pull out at its roots, again and again I speak to this, it is no mystery what you should do. Everyone always knows. It's just how many of you can set aside on a moment-to-moment basis what you should do. If you have a great question about what you should do, then usually what you're really dealing with is you're wrestling on the deep level with, should you do what you know is maximum for others and give up your own desires or not? Mm-hmm. That is really what conscious wrestling. You know, there's so much talk about following your conscience and the good conscience and the bad conscience and so on and so on. My friends, that is just a way of clouding a very simple issue, which is if there is chaos, if there is confusion, then you are not clear in your motive. And if your motive is to aggrandize yourself in any way, then you're going to have a conflict when you come up against something that says, if I do thus, I will get my desires fulfilled, but if I do thus, I will help someone else along the way. I will keep from hurting someone else or destroying someone else or putting someone else in a negative position, so on. It isn't difficult. If you'll just look at the goal, and this is what goes back to what I consider to be a maximum importance, which is if there is confusion in your life, then you must know that you have not aligned yourself behind a single goal. Chaos comes because you have not aligned yourself beside a goal. The reason that there are millionaires in the world, the reason there is so amassed wealth in certain instances, is their gold is unflinching. They know what they're going after and they go for it. Why are there powerful politicians in the world? Because their goal is, you know, are you so surprised when you look at your politicians and you see that they have along the way been dishonest, when they have used people in any way, shape, or form that they want to? Why are you surprised? That is power in motion. It is going toward a very singular goal. And everything else then becomes secondary and is overridden in order to reach that goal. Why is there such a surprise? I think you were very naive to expect a politician to be able to arrive at a pinnacle of power such as the presidency, the governorship, a senatorship, whatever, to have arrived at those positions and not have employed all methods necessary in order to get there. How can you expect an honest person to move into a dishonest system and emerge at the top honest when part of the built-in part of that system demands that you subjugate all other impulses behind this one impulse for power? I think you're very naive as humans to expect anyone to be able to come through that system and not be dishonest and not have dirtied their garments along the way. I think you are very naive, my friends. And I think you are expecting something of your politicians that none of you would be able to perform, because you would not succeed in that arena were you not able to manipulate the given symbology. And part of the given structure is dishonesty. As covered over as they would like to put it, it still ends up being manipulative power. And please do not be surprised at the results that you glean to yourselves as leaders of your country, of your state, of your little environments all over. You expect them to be something different when the very structure itself embodies in it this dishonesty. That is the way you get to the top. How then can you expect them to get to the top and have not employed the system? It makes no sense to me. But so it is with the spiritual work too, that once you get behind a goal, once you get behind a very clarified goal of what it is, then you will move with great rapidity, because then the powers move for you. For example, I have said over and over, one of the main foremost things that must be done before you can really move into any area of power is to forgive. Is to constantly forgive. Forgive every moment those people who seem to be attacking you, to forgive. And not to justify an attack in return, but to forgive. And I mean truly to forgive. And to wipe it clear as if it never happened. To truly forgive. To truly look past. Forgiveness in my terms means looking past the first and obvious difficulties of the ego and to look past it to the vastness of the light. And to instantly forgive in such a way that you know that there is really nothing to forgive, because it's simply their illusion and your illusion bound together, creating an unreal experience. And to look immediately past that to the vastness. If this could be done, you are unified behind a goal. And then who can hurt you? Who can hurt you, my friends? Most of you spend so much of your life trying to defend yourself, trying to protect yourself. Who do you look to for your protection? Do you look to the attacks of your ego to protect you? If so, then you are in for a great surprise. You will never be protected, because your ego will attack and you will be attacked in return. And thus it goes. But if you are unified behind a different goal, which is the goal of letting the divine protect you, if that is your goal, if you look to the divine for your wisdom and your protection and your all, then you will find something very different happening. Because then the divine is very easily able to protect you, because you are not doing it in an egotistical way, and another power is allowed to rush in and protect you, uphold you, and lead you on. It's very simple. Where is your goal? What are you unified behind? If you still think that you can defend yourself in any way, then your ego is still doing the defending, and you are in an attack and a defense situation on any front, be it health, be it your daily life, whatever it be. If you are still trying to defend against disease in your own way with your ego, if you're still trying to defend against the world in your own way, whatever way that might be, then you are really defenseless. Because the only defense is that which can truly defend you, which is the divine power. So we are back again to, where is your goal? What are you really behind? And most of you are very fuzzy. You see, you have goals in two camps. You know, the person who is trying to move forward on the spiritual front, but at the same time is trying to tell others what to do, has a foot in both camps. Because they are still caught in the illusion that they know more than others know. And that is illusion. Because the truth is, as long as you're bound in your ego, you don't know anything. You just have different grades of not knowing anything. Because you either know or you don't know. And without exception, everyone listening to this tape does not know. They do not know. And therefore, everyone listening has no right to judge anyone else because they simply do not know. Appearances deceive. You do not know. Therefore, knowing your own ignorance, it seems to me, is the greatest step forward. This is why Socrates stands so beautifully, because he knew that he didn't know anything. And that the only thing that knew was the voice within. And he knew that that voice within him was not his ego. Do you see? He was not confused. But then again, he was a very rare teacher. I feel that we should end this at this time, but before I go, I would like to say one more thing about virtue. The mind can never tell you what virtue is, because the mind is limited to its belief that you are a body, and it is constricted in its understanding because it believes it must move through the body form. In order to understand what virtue really is, and I think this should be a subject for another tape, what is the virtuous man? To understand what virtue really is, you have to move out of your body consciousness and move into what Socrates would call the area of the soul, what I would call the vibrational understanding of divine wisdom, and move into that area and allow it to play upon you in such a way that you will know what is the virtuous act, so that you will know without question that which is absolutely correct behavior, speech, and thought in a certain area of your life, in a certain moment of your life. And so I would ask you to stop going to the wrong source for your understanding, which is when you want to know what is right to do, please do not go into your mind and try and find the answer there, because you will only find whichever speaks loudest in your mind, and that may not be the truth of the situation. The way to know how to do in any instance is to go within and allow the power which hopefully you have built up through solitude and quietude and understanding to speak to you, to play upon you, and to guide you. It simply is a matter of, if you've been doing your homework, then you will know without any question what is the virtuous thing to do. And you won't have to weigh pros and cons. You will know, spontaneously know in the instant what to do. I always return to this, my friends, because it is the only way that you will perform right action in the world. Right action is not a state of mind. Right action is a state of being, which therefore brings about right action. But in order to act right, you must be in a state of right beingness. And this only comes through the building up of the power of the divine within you. So again, if you are doing your homework, my friends, then right action is automatic, spontaneous, unthinking. If you have not, then it is very doubtful whether you are performing maximum action for anyone.